Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. 9 months into a statewide opioid addiction epidemic, and the news is still grim. In a 10-year period, more or less, the number of overdoses in the state has increased by 90%. And as of this morning, just for the month of December, the number of people in Massachusetts who've died from a suspected opiate overdose was 110. And that number does not include Boston, Worcester, or Springfield. Those are cases under investigation by state police and local police.
In Boston, the City Public Health Commission says first responders administered 118 doses of Narcan, which in many cases can reverse the effects of an overdose. The City Commission won't confirm if those were for opioid overdoses, but it did report that during a two-day period just this month, there were 32 suspected overdoses. That's an extraordinary spike.
So for a long time, many people labeled drug users as weak lowlifes, and often the cops treated them as such. But we know now that these people can be your coworkers and mother-in-laws. They are high school students and neighbors. They are middle class, rich and poor, and they are stuck in something that Hillary Jacobs from the State Department of Public Health describes as an epidemic like none other. She joins us in the studio along with Deputy Chief of Police from Walpole, John Carmichael. They have both been involved at the state level trying to make headway into this epidemic in the 9 months since Governor Deval Patrick declared it a public health emergency. Welcome to you both. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Hillary Jacobs, up until July, you were the director of the state's Bureau of Substance Abuse, and now you're coordinating all of the state's opioid policy and initiatives. There is money out there for more rehab beds and prevention and many items that we'll talk about in a few minutes. But what is the report card at this point of this emergency with so many overdoses still being reported?
I think that any time that we lose someone is one time too many. But at the same time, I think that we've done enormous amount of work in a relatively short amount of time to try to address the epidemic. And we need to look at this in terms of both a public health and public safety partnership, as well as the department's responsibility is to look at the areas of prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery supports in the communities. There's a multi-pronged approach that we really need to bring to this epidemic.
Multi-pronged and very integrative or integrated?
Integrated, comprehensive, with our public safety partners, with anyone who has something to offer at this really difficult time.
We're going to hear from John Carmichael in just a moment. I do want to ask you, though, Hillary Jacobs, to date, what we're saying is $20 million that the state has applied toward this. What has it gone toward?
So I can talk about some of the things in each of the categories. So in prevention, we've been able to add five additional opioid abuse prevention coalitions across the state, which brings in multiple communities to work for primary prevention of fatal and non-fatal overdose, as well as primary prevention of anyone becoming addicted to begin with. We've accelerated the enrollment in the prescription monitoring program, which is a really important tool for prescribers to use to be able to identify those people who are at risk or may already have developed addiction disorders and be able to address them in the primary care setting. In the intervention area, we've expanded Narcan, and I'm sure Deputy Chief Carmichael can talk about his experiences, but we've expanded it in 23 communities and two first responders as well as bystander programs. You can now go to a pharmacy without a prescription from your doctor and get naloxone under a standing order from pharmacies that carry it. Naloxone is Narcan. And we are piloting some regional assessment centers so that people can have quicker access to the treatment that they need. And in terms of treatment, you had mentioned that we are adding a number of beds. We've procured 128 new detox and clinical stabilization beds. There are other beds that we are in the process of procuring. We're working with community health centers to integrate buprenorphine treatment into community health centers. That is sometimes better known as Suboxone. We are piloting injectable naltrexone, which is a drug called Vivitrol. In the Department of Correction, we're adding centers for youth. We are adding Learn to Cope, which is a great parent support organization.
So many, many, again, as you said, many areas underway need to address this. Deputy Chief John Carmichael, I want to ask you, though, what you make of the use of Narcan, that more police officers among the first responders might be carrying it. And I understand from a health worker that, or a substance abuse clinician, that for police now to be administering Narcan is a really big shift in what how police used to look at drug users they found on the edge of death.
Exactly. Looking at how the law enforcement is responding to these issues now, we've completely had to change our approach and how we deal with these types of situations. There is an ongoing transformation in law enforcement community right now. The days of, you know, looking back over the years of treating these people a certain way as maybe, you know, a quote junkie or that type of thing, that's all gone now, and we need to start focusing on what the underlying problems are and what our response should be. We emphasize with people that suffer from these substance use disorders, and as such, we've accepted this carrying the Narcan in police cars and that type of thing with open arms. Quincy was one of the original departments that started out with that and under the pilot program from DPH.
Several years ago at this point. I mean,
correct,
it's very new
yes.
to much of the state, but...
They're actually part of my county in Norfolk County, and it's been very successful there. So we know that the standard has been set in Quincy. And now throughout our county and throughout the state, other departments have signed on, and they're using this Narcan, they're deploying it out on the street, and it's saving lives.
Mm-hmm. It's a more compassionate approach, would you say? I mean, in a place that there, you know, when there is law enforcement involved, you don't think about, you know, how we do think about law enforcement as saving lives. But when it's come to this issue of drug abuse and overdoses, compassion was not part of the picture a few decades ago.
Correct, and that's what we're trying to get away from. We know that, and we realize that we cannot arrest our way out of this situation. It's not a police problem. It's a community problem. It's a public health problem. Like Hillary said, it's and it is a law enforcement problem to a certain degree, but it's going to take a lot of different stakeholders at the table in order to rectify this whole situation in the state. And there's a lot of things that we've done that can continue to do to deal with this problem.
Okay. Before we go to some callers, I do want to ask you about one of the hurdles here, which is there's the stigma of drug use, but also, Hillary, the rewiring of the brain when it's on heroin or an opiate, and how that hampers any effort that the state or beyond Massachusetts is making to address the deaths and overall the addiction. The initial addiction.
It's a really important point, which is unlike other diseases, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration put out a report that said 95% of people with substance use disorders don't see the need for treatment. And that's because they're using medications that, not medications, they're using drugs illicitly that do rewire their brain and hijack their reward systems and really impact their decision-making in ways that don't happen with other diseases.
Mm-hmm. So how does that factor into law, your police officers in your department? And I mean, if you could think about statewide as well, given that you've worked at the Governor's Council, mm-hmm. How does that approach work when you're seeing somebody who's overdosing?
Well, it's just as when they're overdosing?
Yeah, or? I mean, in the notion of is there a cultural shift in law enforcement? So we know that this addiction mm-hmm. is a disease and that it's real and that it's been documented and scientific. So is right. that really able to get to the street level? Like you're a leader and you're speaking about this, but what's it like in the ranks?
Yes, when we're dealing with people these days in comparison to how we've done it in the past, We engage people more. We engage somebody that's suffering from a substance use disorder. We know who the people are that suffer from this disease are in our community. We have officers that will engage them. We'll go face-to-face. We'll try and get them referrals. And we'll try and get them into a detox or into a treatment facility. On all of our arrests, we debrief all people that come in. Say they're arrested on a shoplifting charge or something like that. We find out that they're addicted to some type of substance, usually an opiate. Then we will... we'll give them referrals, and, you know, it's not just arrest them, put them into the system, revolve them back out, and deal with it that way. We're really trying to engage these people and trying to get them some help and give them all of the resources that are out there. And now more so because of all the work that the Opioid Task Force did and the law now and everything is really going to help
since
out.
Since March. All right, let's get some listeners in the conversation. The number to call in is 800-423-8255, 1-800-423-8255. How satisfied are you with the state's response thus far to this epidemic? And have you been personally touched by this drug epidemic? Are you even aware that this is a top problem in the state, along with energy and healthcare costs? This is an issue. 800-423-TALK. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Todd is calling from Beverly. Hello, Todd.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us. Go ahead.
I wanted to make a comment and ask for some response to a question. Hillary, you listed off a long list of different, what sounded to me as reactive responses. Is there anything being done proactively to help people avoid opiate addiction to begin with and try to address some of the mental health or maybe socioeconomic issues that are driving people to use these drugs?
Yes, I think that I may not have talked enough about what some of our primary prevention efforts are. And one thing that people don't realize a lot about is that actually early drinking behavior, underage drinking, is linked to the development of later substance use disorders, including opioid use disorders. And so we have a lot of focus on in our communities around helping stop all kinds of addictive disorders, including underage drinking. And that's an important point and sometimes gets lost in the opioid conversation.
You know, John Carmichael, in the police force, you talk about risk management. Like, you're putting out fires all the time, right?
You had
said to me earlier that now, as an adult who's overdosing, is not the time to begin managing this problem. It needs to be managed in, Hillary, as you're describing, prevention efforts. What does that look like to you as a police officer in a city?
Well, it's been difficult, but we do have a lot of different things set up. The problem is that it's just not done in every department across the state as far as the prevention side of it. You know, there's a lot of coalitions out there. Our department is part of a local coalition. We're a part of other Norfolk County coalitions. Those are very important aspects on the prevention side of it. We also do other things like the Drug Take Back Initiative, and we have a kiosk in our station where we're bringing in all those extra prescription drugs that would otherwise possibly be diverted or in the hands of kids and that type of thing. As far as risk management, you're exactly right. Like, we cannot, the naloxone and dealing with the overdoses in a different way is going to help. But in the end, we really need to go back into look at our adolescent community, the most susceptible people in our population, and deal with the prevention aspect of it there. And like Hillary said, that age of onset, when that age of onset starts to go down, we're going to see more drug use history in the future. And it's key. It's key to this whole situation.
Okay. And just briefly, because I want to get another call in. When you talk about prevention programs and community efforts, and I know the Boston Public Health Commission, someone said to me this morning, she said, so we're stepping up after this spike in suspected overdoses, we're stepping up our community outreach. Is that like the old or former DARE programs that police departments would have running where they'd engage in schools? Is this similar to that, and was that enough?
Well, the DARE program, I mean, that's obviously that we don't use that anymore in the state. In my opinion, we should have let that program play out a little bit longer than it did. It wasn't longitudinally enough. In Walpole, we do put officers in the schools still. We have them go in there, and we do teach them curriculums on marijuana, especially in alcohol, because we know that those are, you quote, gateway drugs. So we try and deal with that type of prevention aspect of it there. But again, you know, that's not standardized across the state. So, you know, everybody's kind of doing their own different thing, and we need to come up with better approaches on everyone doing it the same way.
I think that prevention work has really changed in that there are actually evidence-based prevention programs that the federal government supports that we are supporting, integrating into our community coalitions. And our community coalitions themselves look very different than they used to in that they are bringing multiple stakeholders to the table and not just a few people who are interested in the problem.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that when we're hearing about the stakeholders and the multiple parties that were also putting faces on this, because I wonder how residents and people working in the state are hearing about the efforts. They hear prevention and they might go, well, what does that mean? Let's hear from John, who's calling from Dorchester, because his own personal experience may help us think about this. John, hello.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for calling
hello?
In. Yeah, hello. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for calling in. Good. Go ahead, please.
Well, first of all, I'm so glad to be able to be a participant in this, and coming from a background of active addiction for many years and getting clean over 28 years ago, I've seen the both sides of the fence, and I'm just grateful to the fact that people are a lot more aware of, you know, what addicts are about and what we're not about. You know, that stereotype is dead, at least it's dying, and we hope that will continue, that addicts do get clean and stay clean and become viable parts of the community. And so I wanted to just share the fact that the way I got clean was based on 12-step, and I don't hear that as much as a model anymore for treatment for addicts, and I'm hoping that we're not going to be put aside when we know that, you know, it's impacted millions of people's lives, the 12-step recovery programs.
John, thank you so much. 12-step is one way dealing with any kind of substance abuse. Hillary Jacobs, you have been a social worker as well, dealing with addiction of all kinds, I imagine, over the years. What's your take on the 12-step and John's approach?
Enormous respect for 12-step programs. Congratulations on your 28 years of recovery. That's really a very remarkable achievement. I think that 12-step programs can also be combined with other things, and particularly for opioids, we know from the literature that medication-assisted treatment, meaning the use of methadone, buprenorphine, injectable naltrexone, helps people deal with cravings and get that step up that they need to move on to long-term recovery. So there's room for everything. And we should make room, and we won't forget about 12-step programs.
Listeners, we are talking about the opioid epidemic that is still, I would say, raging, if that's not an overstatement, Hillary, in the state of Massachusetts, in New England, in the nation. We'd like to hear from you in the next few minutes. 800-423-TALK is the number to call. You can also find us on Facebook and at Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Wanda in Grafton, you are bringing up a topic that I think is really important, and make sure we don't miss out on this. Thank you for calling, and please go ahead with your comment.
Hi, thank you so much. This is extremely frustrating to me. I've worked in the treatment side, and my point is, in terms of prevention, is anything being done to address the overprescribing of opiates by physicians in Massachusetts? I've heard a number of statistics. I can't tell you. I'm actually in my car, pulled over right now, that Massachusetts has an incredibly much higher rate of this whole opiate addiction problem than other places in the country. And I myself had a surgery a couple years ago, and I was told by my physician at Mass General that I was not allowed to leave the hospital without a prescription for a narcotic pain med, and I tried. I didn't want it, but this was what I was told. So is anything being done to address the physician side, since so many people start on prescription drugs and then go to street drugs because they're so much more affordable? And I'll take the comment off the line.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Wanda. And that, you know, I think these prescribed opiates are considered like a gateway drug of some kind.
Sure. Yes, we are definitely working with physicians who are another stakeholder group. And the way that we work with them is through the prescription monitoring program, which, again, is a very important tool in understanding what medications have already been prescribed to a person. And we also work with them on a regular basis in terms of continuing education that's required for state licensure to prescribe these medications. And that education covers appropriate pain management, because people need their pain managed, as well as understanding addiction and strategies to promote pain management without promoting addiction.
Deputy Chief, I want to ask you one question. Deputy Chief John Carmichael from Walpole. The legalization of marijuana in the middle of this, the legalization of medical marijuana in the middle of this crisis. How does that affect your work on a day-to-day basis, and what do you make of that?
I think it's going to have an effect on the overall scheme. The attitudes, behaviors, the beliefs of how we feel about drugs and holistically, I think it's going to have an effect. By separating drugs and thinking that, you know, this one's better than that one and this one's not as harmful, I think confuses people, and it especially our adolescents, again, going back to them, their perception of harm has decreased as a result of decriminalization of medical marijuana, and now we're talking about legalization. So I do think that it has an impact.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there for today. I'm sorry the time is short because there's plenty more to say. Hilary Jacobs from the State Department of Public Health, thank you so much for coming in.
Sure. Thank you.
And Deputy Chief of Police in Walpole, John Carmichael, thank you for coming all this way.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, inaugural poet Richard Blanco on what normalized relations between Cuba and the U.S. means for Cuban-American communities. I'm Jill Kaufman with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.